Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Jones!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket with me, Simon Hughes, and Simon Mann. And hope you're managing to get out and about with the slow unravelling of lockdown, at least getting to the golf course or getting to the park or whatever. Actually, it's weird. It's appropriate in a way that it's at Easter time that we're slowly getting out of lockdown, because it feels a bit like a rebirth, doesn't it? And suddenly all the parks are filling up, and I guess a few people have got out onto the golf course as well. I've seen people running to the nets to play some cricket. So it's really good to sort of feel the country slowly getting back to normal. One man who isn't back to normal yet is our guest today on the Analyst Inside Cricket podcast, Chris Wokes, who was our guest in the Virtual Cricket Club last night and who is currently incarcerated in a hotel in Mumbai. So we'll let him tell you exactly what's going on in a minute. But just to say first, a couple of things. The World's Best Cricket Club has been going well through the winter to raise money for the Professional Cricketers Trust, the charity that supports cricketers who've fallen on hard times. We've had an absolute stellar list of brilliant guests. And following Chris Wokes last night, next Thursday, we have David Gower as our special guest. And the week after, on a Wednesday, the 14th of April, we have Geoffrey Boycott, Sir Geoffrey Boycott, I should call him. So those are our two next guests. And I really urge you to join this club, because we do have an hour and a half with these star, ex or current England players. You can ask them direct questions on screen. There's some brilliant memorabilia to win, signed World Cup pictures and other interesting memorabilia signed by our special guests, as I say, all in aid of the Professional Cricketers Trust. It's £6 a month to join, and for that you get four live events, lots of podcasts like this one, and also the opportunity to win memorabilia and to win Lord's tickets as well, Lord's Test Match tickets, which will be up for grabs in the next month or two. So it's really good value, actually, a £6 a month signage to that club. To join, you just go to worldsbestcricketclub.com, worldsbestcricketclub.com, and sign up. Simple as that. And I should also just mention, before we get into Chris Wokes as well, the Cricketer magazine's 100th year anniversary issue is out. If you haven't seen it already, it's an absolute bumper edition of the magazine called The Finest Century Ever Made. And it really is, actually, because the cricketer surviving pandemics, world wars, financial crises, and all sorts of other things over the 100 years. So we tell the story of how it survived through the century and all the influential people in it. There's a big feature, actually, about Pelham Warner, our founder, and some really interesting stuff about him from his granddaughter, Marina, who is still alive. Some great columns, some real interesting stuff from a lot of star people who've written into us and said well done, like Stephen Fry, like Piers Morgan and others, and some usual the usual features as well, and a big preview of the county season. Each county gets 2 pages, and also there is the famous wall chart, summer wall chart, giving you full guidance of what's happening throughout the English summer. So that really is well worth getting, the Cricketer 100th anniversary issue. There is a special offer on the Cricketer at the moment. For £19.21, you can get 6 editions, so that's a 6-month subscription, by going to www.thecricketer.com/centenary. And to join our cricket club, as I said before, you go to worldsbestcricketclub.com for our next few events. So 2 really good things to sign up for there. Hope you will. OK, so let's get to Chris Wokes. And he's had a weird experience over the last few months. Player of the Year last year, the PCA England Player of the Year, hasn't played since. Extraordinary 6 months, trailing around as 12th man, experiencing quarantine in all sorts of places. Very frustrating it must have been. And so the first thing I asked him was, how's he dealt with that time in isolation, constantly not able to play as well, being in quarantine in various hotels? What's his secret ingredient for keeping himself sane?
I'm still yet to find it, really, although I spent a lot of time on the PlayStation, which for a man of my age shouldn't be doing. But it's got to that point with quarantine and bubble life and stuff, and all the other boys jumping on the gaming bandwagon that I've had to join. But so that takes up a bit of time. But otherwise, I try and I try and do a checklist every day and make sure I tick off 3 or 4 things to make sure that I've actually done something productive. So that might just be life admin, which I've given an hour to, read a book for an hour, do some FaceTime calls with friends and family, and also tick off an hour's exercise each day in your room as well. So they've actually given me a bike, which you can't quite see, but there's a bike here to my left, which is keeping me occupied and keeping me fit whilst in quarantine. So that's about it, really.
So when you came from the airport, Chris, you had, what happened? You were in a van or something from the airport, straight to the hotel, straight to your room, and that's it for a week, is it, or something like that?
That is literally it. You turn up at the hotel, your bags are sanitised, you're sanitised, they spray you from head to toe. And you literally, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, you see people on the way, but you try and keep your distance. And you literally go to your room, and then that's it. You're there for 7 days until you clear. I think it's 3 tests we have. We have 1 on day 1, 1 on day 4, and then another 1 on day 6. And then the result comes back on day 7. And then all being well, you're allowed out.
So how many times have you done that this winter? I'm just trying to think how many times winter. It would have been.
How many tests have you had?
Oh God, I've lost count of the tests, that is for sure. The brutal tests were in South Africa. I mean, I've never been pretty invasive tests they were. They were literally, they went far, put it that way. But no, I'm just trying to think. We didn't do any time in South Africa from memory. I don't think we isolated there. I think I did about a week in Sri Lanka. And about a week in India, so, and then a week now. So in total, it'll be about 3 weeks across the winter. Yeah, but also that doesn't count the 5-day test and release we had to do when we got back to the UK after India as well. So there's been plenty.
So what did you have to do when you got back from India? Because you missed the end of the tour, didn't you? You were in that bubble and then watching everyone else play, and then probably about the time when. People saying it's time for him to play, it was time to come home.
Yeah, that's right. I when the toss went up and I wasn't included in that third test match, they managed to get me on a pretty quick flight and got me out of India and back home. The same thing about back home in a minute. There was an exemption for professional sport where we could kind of just crack on because we were being tested and we were coming from bubbles. But that changed in February, and we have to do 5 days test and release. So after 5 days, we have a test back at home, obviously having to isolate for those 5 days. If you test negative, you're good to carry on.
I mean, it's an awful lot to go through, isn't it? I mean, I know people have been going through all sorts of things at home as well, you know, and obviously a lot of bereavement for some people as well. But it's been an onerous winter in that sense, especially if you don't get as well.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it?
I think that's the probably thing that I found tough this winter, really, is more the fact that having not played, being stuck in these bubbles, and I've done a few interviews about my winter recently, and you know, you don't like to sound like a privileged sportsman, you know, that we all get it our own way, but these bubbles have been quite tough. You know, mentally, we know people are going through hard times at home, and isolation and restrictions and lockdowns at home is tough as well. But these cricket tours aren't normal cricket tours, and we are very much locked away, almost as like prisoners. And you kind of go to the cricket ground, come back, and then you're locked away again. So it has been tough. And I think not having that mental sort of, kind of having the cricket to kind of focus on from a playing point of view has made it that little bit harder for me, I think.
So how's the IPL going to work out for you, Chris? Well, what happens from now on? You get out of the weekend, and then it's practice, and then straight into the tournament, and you're going to be... Is that sort of lockdown experience that you were talking about going to continue? I mean, India's COVID rate's going up, isn't it? And there's going to be no crowds at the IPL this year. I mean, it's going to be really weird again.
Yeah, it's going to be strange. So it's kind of, you know, you take one step forward, don't you? Two back each time. And that's been the case for the whole year, really. Obviously in the UK, we're hoping that things are going in the right direction. The vaccine's obviously a huge part of it. But for now, I mean, the IPL, like you say, India's rates seem to be going up. We're definitely going to be playing behind closed doors. You can't see that really changing in the near future. But yeah, like you say, I'll get out, I'll get myself into training, and then the tournament starts. And I think, you know, players have kind of got used to playing without fans. Of course, we prefer playing with them. I think we're quite lucky that the sport we play kind of builds its own sort of atmosphere and tension. You know, there was that Indian... England series recently, that one day series in particular. I was watching from home and listening to quite a bit from home. And I was on the edge of my seat listening to that and watching that. And obviously there was no fans in the crowd. So I think we're quite fortunate with cricket that it does create that sort of buzz and that tension without the crowds. We're quite lucky with that.
And you're obviously playing, you know, in amongst a number of other star bowlers, overseas bowlers. You're competing with Henri Nocki, Kigiso Rabada, Tom Curran, who else? Someone else. You've got Umesh Yadav, haven't you? So, I mean, when you're in it, and you, this is your third IPL franchise, what's it like when you're, when you play for England, you're sort of fairly sure of your spot, obviously, especially in England. But with this, because you can only play four overseas players and there's two or three sort of jockeying for one spot, I mean, what's that like?
Yeah, it's, as you touched on, it's a little bit different to what, like the England stuff, obviously. You generally get a feel for if you're going to play or not quite, you know, relatively soon or early on. Whereas with this, I think, because, you know, it's all new to, particularly to me coming into this team, a couple of the guys have been here for... you got to try and impress in training, but then at the same time you do realise that, you know, they've picked you on the basis that, you know, they think you're a good player, otherwise they wouldn't have picked you off in the auction in the first place. So yeah, they must like you as a player, they must like what skill sets you have. It's just then trying to prove, I suppose, in practice that for them to give you the nod. But like you say, you're competing with some really good players and some world-class players, which makes it hard, but at the same time, that's what makes it exciting. I think, IPL is a really good challenge. You always come up against great teams. You look at every lineup, they're all filled with world-class players. And I quite enjoy that competition, you know, trying to get in the team. You know, it's a good part of the IPL, and kind of being able to pick each other's brains around training and things like that with the players that you play against a lot of the time around the world. Is such a unique experience.
It's also worth remembering you're with a very strong team as well, because the Delhi Capitals reached the final last time. Okay, the Mumbai Indians beat them every time they played them, and they looked the strongest side. But you got Ricky Ponting as your coach. Steve Smith has joined the Delhi Capitals for this competition as well. How do you see the tournament playing out? I mean, do you see yourselves as sort of among the favourites, perhaps second favourite for the competition?
Yeah, it's one of those, isn't it? I think with IPL, I always think it's when I played it and when I've just watched it from home. You look at it and I feel like every year you start with a clean slate. Almost doesn't really matter what happened the year before. You know, there's always a few changes of personnel within the teams, and sometimes some coaching staff moved around. I think the teams that have had, you know, longevity are the ones that have kind of kept teams fairly similar and just tinkered here and there. And that's what Delhi have done over the last few years, to be fair. And they've gone from strength to strength. And they've, you know, like you said, they had a great tournament last year. But Mumbai have been kind of standout for a few years now, haven't they? And they've built a team around their Indian batsmen, I'd say. So I think we've got a great chance, of course. But T20 is so unpredictable at times. It is about getting on runs at certain times of the tournament. And I'm looking forward to be a part of it. I think, you know, obviously I've had a tough winter with England, and it's quite refreshing to come into a different environment, different group, and completely different tournament, and see where I go, really.
Jacobs asked a question on the chat box. It was the same question I was going to ask next. Is no Shreyas Iyer as captain, but so Rishabh Pant is going to be the captain. I mean, that's an interesting choice. I mean, and a very interesting cricketer as well.
Yeah, it certainly is. I remember the first time I played against Rishabh was a walk game in India, probably, I don't know, it must have been a good 4 or 5 years ago, maybe 4 years ago. And he played for India A. And he came in and from ball one just kind of teed off and whacked in. And we were just like, whoa, who's this young player? And you could just tell he was going to be something special. And he's obviously sharing that now, isn't he? I mean, he's obviously had little bits of brilliance over the last couple of years, but he's really putting it together now as a player. I think he's obviously maturing as a cricketer and certainly plays the game in an aggressive manner, which is great to see. You know, I'm thankful he's on our team and not someone else's. You know, I'd rather be bowling to him behind the stumps than him at the crease. But yeah, it's exciting. It'll be a great opportunity for him to obviously, you know, take the reins from Shreyas, and unfortunate for him with the injury, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he goes. I think he's obviously a fantastic cricketer, but you just hope having the captaincy doesn't take away from the way he plays his cricket.
He talks a good game, doesn't he? He sounds like, I mean, he certainly has fun, and he likes a chat as well.
Yeah, he does like a chat. I remember playing, again, it was an A game at Worcester, and he was giving plenty behind the stumps. It was quite amusing. Never abusive or anything like that. Just quite witty, quite fun character to be around. So
he plays with a smile, doesn't he? Yeah,
he does.
Who would you say? I mean, this is a tricky question, I suppose. But is there someone that every bowler fears the most in the IPL? Is there someone who you think, you know, that's the one I want to avoid, or I want to get him out quickly?
Oh, I mean, there's plenty, to be really honest with you. But I still feel there's loads, isn't there, that you'd rather not bowl at if you could help it. But I think I still feel probably the standout's AB de Villiers, really. He's still Mr. 360. He can kind of, on the flick of a switch, can kind of change a game, can't he? So, maybe still AB de Villiers, maybe. But look, I could name probably 5 or 10, to be honest. And Rishabh Pant, probably one of those now, to be fair.
Yeah. Have you spoken to Rishabh Pant very much? Or is it one of those things where you're fairly disparate and then everyone comes together at the last minute, especially this tournament, and then you sort of build your team spirit and your tactics and things like that?
Yeah, I think, I haven't spoken to him on a personal level. We've had a couple of team meetings via Zoom already, because a lot of guys are still in quarantine. So there's been a couple of team chats via Zoom. I haven't spoken to him individually, but I think it's a matter of, I think the IPL, what happens is you get a lot of guys joining teams at different different times. I mean, the Australians have only just, I think, left Australia today. So they're going to be obviously behind from a quarantine point of view. I don't think they get out until about the 8th or the 9th. So I think everyone joins at different times. And I think that's just part of the IPL. You kind of get people coming and leaving at different times and you just kind of get on with it, really. I think the main thing is that everyone's kind of ready whenever they get the nod to play to go out there and perform.
I see there's a question from Will Gould in the chat box, and we'll get members' questions on screen a little bit later. Will says, has Chris faced Jofra Archer in the nets? Of course, Jofra's not going to be there at the start of the IPL. He's got this elbow problem and also that remarkable injury, the fish tank injury, with a bit of glass in his finger. Has Chris faced Jofra Archer in the nets?
Yeah. Yeah, he's. I have certainly faced Jofra in the nets. I don't think I've probably ever faced him with him at full tilt, to be honest. I think, you know, occasionally he's he obviously probably saves that for the games or when the captain comes into bat. But thankfully, you know, you generally have a bit of a bowler's union. He doesn't really bowl too many bouncers or if any at your fellow bowlers. So thankfully, I haven't faced too much of him, but I try and do my best to avoid him if I can. But for those, you look at the whiteboard at the start of training and see where you're bowling and see where you're batting. The first thing you look at is, where am I batting? Who am I facing? And if it's anyone quick, you're like, oh, my God, not him again. But
you've got Andrich, you've got Nocky and Rabada to face Nocky in your Delhi nets. I mean, they'll be spicy, won't they?
I remember at the start of the summer when we had that camp, the COVID camp type thing at the start of the summer last year. And I think I had, was it Woody and Joff? I think it might have been Woody and Joff in my net. And I was like, what's going on here? I must be the net tester or something, opening the batting against Woody and Joff. I was like, maybe I'm batting three this test match or they're just checking the nets.
The guinea pig. Just one more question about the IPL quickly. What do you try and get into? I spent a bit of time with the Royals in 2 years ago when it was in India last, and they sort of tried to set up their daily routine a bit on what they call on English time, actually, because your matches are finishing after midnight. And then by the time you've got back to the hotel, chilled out a bit and had a beer or something, it's sort of 3 o'clock in the morning, 3 or 4 in the morning. And then you kind of go to bed and sort of sleep till midday. So that's what they were doing, kind of almost on English time, 4.5 hours ahead of us. Is it a question of sort of almost realigning your body clock a bit because you're not starting work effectively until sort of 6 or 7 in the evening?
Yeah, that's right. You play literally one or two day games maximum, don't you? So, whenever I've been to IPL, that kind of seems to be the norm, really. Breakfast becomes lunch and lunch becomes dinner type thing. And you go and try and sleep a little bit later than you usually would, because there's no real reason to get up at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the morning when your game doesn't start till 7:30, 8 o'clock at night, is it? So, I think naturally players, you know, pre-game get, you know, those pre-game nerves. And they use it quite a lot of your energy, especially your mental energy. So the last thing you want to be doing is getting up so early that you're absolutely knackered by the time the game starts. So generally that's what I've tried and what a lot of people do try at IPL. I mean, you never have a morning practice at IPL as well. So your training is always either, you know, mid-afternoon or an evening practice. So kind of makes sense to do that, yeah.
The key thing then is the do not disturb button or little hanging label on your hotel door. Otherwise, you've got the cleaners in at 8 in the morning, haven't you?
That's right. You don't want to forget to do that. Otherwise, your sleep is well and truly interrupted. And anyone who hasn't been to India, if you don't put that on the door, they're ringing every hour. I don't know what the reason. They ring every half an hour.
And if you do put it on the door, if you do put it on the door, the room isn't clean for about a week as well. They never go in, do they? Listen, anyway, let's recap. You talked about your batting before. Let's recap one of your career highlights with the bat anyway. which was your 100 at Lord's in 2017, was it? A game in which you also took 10 wickets. So you're on both honours boards, one of only about three cricketers ever done that. Great innings. What are your memories of that innings?
I remember I batted seven that game. And, you know, I think it was because Stokes, it was actually the game that Stokesy had his trial. So that was the reason why I played. I came into the side for Stokesy kind of thing to bolster the kind of all-rounder role. I got the opportunity to bat seven, which some people might think is a bit high, but, you know, I always have ability in my batting and kind of went to the crease. And I wouldn't say we were in trouble, but it was a low-scoring game up until that point. We certainly bowled India out for a cheap score. And it was just about trying to build a partnership with Johnny at the other end. Johnny was obviously the in batsman and tried to build a little bit of a partnership with him. And then just found, I think the sun came out at one point and all of a sudden the pitch felt pretty good to bat on all of a sudden. And we kind of made the most of it and kind of took the almost counter-attacked against the Indian bowlers. And I remember Johnny was on about 70. I must have been on about 60. And before I knew it, I looked up and I was on 90 and he was kind of on something similar to what he was before. So I raced past him. And the only thing that I regret about that day is probably not taking in the actual 100 moment a little bit more than I probably should have done. It's all a bit of a blur and probably kind of rushed my celebration a little bit. But it's something which I never really ever dreamed of because I didn't think I'd really have the opportunity to make 100 at Lord's, let alone playing for England. So pretty special feeling, really. I've never been in that position before, especially for England in front of a full house at Lord's. So that puts a little bit of pressure on it, doesn't it? But it was more the fact that just a little bit after, I think I'd like to have maybe just looked around a little bit more and took in the stone innovation. That's the only thing I'd like to have done a little bit more of. Because when you're in the moment, it all happens so fast, but still incredible moments, remember.
Good scoring, right? 100 runs off 129 balls, blimey.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I kind of raced from 70 to 90 real quick. I remember hitting four or five boundaries in the space of no time. So maybe I was getting nervous and started playing a few more shots.
and is that an innings you keep? Are you one of those players who likes to keep certain performances, you know, in your iPad or laptop or whatever to look at before a match?
Well, it's funny you asked that, actually, because it's quite funny how you said that, because I had a bit of a barren run, actually, over the last... until last summer. I was having a bit of a tricky time with the bat. Well, particularly hadn't scored any runs anyway. Every time I went to the crease, I don't think I got past five for about five or six innings for England. And I was tinkering with my technique a bit. And I spoke with a few different coaches about, you know, what they thought. And then in the end, I was trying that many different things. I actually just went to the analyst and asked for that footage. And had a look at the whole innings, not just the runs, not just the boundaries, but every single ball, and just kind of looked at my trigger, looked at the timings of my movements and things like that. And this was in the middle of the summer last year. And then the next test match, I actually scored that 84 not out to win the game. And it might be complete coincidence, but it kind of just reminded me that actually sometimes you look for things that actually aren't there and aren't wrong. And aren't actually the issue. Sometimes it's kind of a mental thing and you just need to go out there and try and be confident and actually get past your first 20 balls, get to 20, then all of a sudden the whole game is a lot easier. So I'm glad that I did that, but whether it's coincidence or not, I don't know, but that certainly seemed to be the case.
It was a remarkable test match, that. And when Ollie Pope got that ball that sort of leapt at him on that, what turned out to be the final day, yeah. And you were going out there with Josh Butler. I mean, did you really think it was on, or do you think actually this pitch is a bit too tricky and the target is just a bit too much for us against their bowling attack on that surface? I mean, what's the sort of the level of belief when you go out to bat in that situation?
I think when you first go out, you kind of take the winning total out of it. Well, that's the way I kind of look at it. I mean, having seen what Popey had just faced, I was starting to think, God, just want to come out of here alive, to be honest, or without a broken wrist or a broken arm. But I think once you face a few balls and you know, because when you first go out there, all you're doing is focused on the ball. You know, you're not focused on anything else. You're not worried about the scoreboard. And again, kind of just like what I've just said, once I got to 15, once I got to 20, once I faced probably 25, 30 balls, and you build a partnership with your guy at the other end, who was Joss that day, you kind of then start to get into the game and start thinking about the total and start thinking about what's possible. And I think me and Joss both, by that point, when we both kind of started to build a partnership, we're in a position where we're like, right, we can do this. Of course, it's going to be tricky, but we've got to believe. And, you know, we kind of certainly had the belief that we could go on and do it. Of course, there's a long way to go, but I think you have to believe deep down that you can do it. Otherwise, there's not much point being out there.
Mm. Yeah, it was an extraordinary game, really, and to win from that position. Mm. I mean, it felt like Pakistan's match for, I don't know, almost 7/8 of the game, something like that. And then you ended up winning it reasonably comfortably in the end.
Yeah, it was. I mean, had Joss not got at the end, it would have been, you know, it would have been a breeze, wouldn't it? An amazing. It's one of my favourite moments in an England shirt. It certainly is. I mean, like you say, to win a game from that position against a talented Pakistan side in conditions which were, you know, very much suited to them. The ball was spinning, the wicket was going a bit up and down. The sort of kind of things that they thrive on in this, the fourth inning of the Test match, when, you know, their seamers kind of love bowling on that sort of surface. So, an amazing win. And really, you know, really one to remember. That partnership with Joss was fantastic. I just wish Joss hadn't quite got out when he did, and we'd have both walked off together. Would have been kind of, he certainly deserved that. It was a shame that he couldn't walk off, but even still, we won the game, which is the main thing.
One more question, really, about the sort of relation with the IPL and county cricket. So, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, you'd have now been shaping up with Warwickshire, probably, you know, on the nursery ground at Edgbaston, warming up for first county match. And now you're in India for 2 months. Is it a weird feeling not being involved in county cricket now, this time, April, May? Or have you kind of got used to it? And if you haven't got used to it, how do you sort of overcome it?
I would say I've definitely got used to it. I think at first, when I first did it, I was a bit, it felt a bit wrong, and didn't quite feel quite right. But I think as time's gone on, and the more times you do it, it becomes the norm. And actually now it's quite nice not to be having to field balls in March and in April in the freezing cold. But at the same time, it is a bit strange. It's a bit, you know, a bit of a weird feeling knowing that Warwickshire and, you know, the counties are in the thick of things start of the county season. But it becomes it just becomes something which you get used to. And it doesn't mean I don't focus on what's going on back home. I still keep a real on tabs of what's happening, keep in touch with everyone at Warwickshire and obviously with England as well, because, you know, obviously the English summer's around the corner as well.
And so, I mean, is there a tendency to get, or is there do you feel a bit detached from Warwickshire?
Because
you're not there every day, sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that's not an IPL thing. I think that's just an England thing. When you become a centrally contracted player for England, more so now than maybe back 10 years ago or even less time than that, we don't necessarily play for our counties too often. The international schedules, if you're playing 3 formats or 2 formats, you kind of just don't have time to play for your county. And when you do, it's usually a semi-final or a final where, they want you to play to maybe boost their chances potentially. Or, you know, that's the only time really that you get an opportunity to play, which means you're doing well because you're a mainstay in the England team. But, you know, it is a shame that the England players don't probably play as much for their counties as they used to. But it's purely down on scheduling. There's just so much cricket going on.
Have you ruled yourself out in your own mind of playing in? I mean, you've got a very good record at Lords. Have you ruled yourself out effectively with that first Test match of the summer against New Zealand at the start of June?
No, not at all. obviously, the tricky thing is, obviously, a lot of the guys had committed to IPL before those test matches were announced or put in the schedule. And then obviously they're put in, and then, you know, it's a tricky situation to be put in. I mean, look, I don't want to miss a test match at Lords. Of course I don't. One, my record is good there. And also, you know, you're representing England at Lords. It's a huge honour. I think that's something just to look at further down the line. The final of the IPL is on the 30th of May. If Delhi wasn't to make that final, or for instance, I wasn't looking like I'd played many games by then and wasn't going to be in with featuring in the games, that's a discussion to be had with the hierarchy here, if they could potentially let us go a week early or so to hopefully prepare for a test match at Lords. If Delhi do get to the final and I'm in around the squads, unfortunately, I think that at the minute, unless the ECB were to call us back, it's hard for us to kind of pull the pin, having committed to the IPL.
Mark, you're on the screen. Hi there.
Hiya, how are you?
Good evening. How are you?
Yes, very good, thank you. Hiya, Chris. Thanks for coming on.
A couple
of questions. You play quite a bit of cricket. Who was the favourite? What's the favourite wicket? Got a player, which one's your favourite? Secondly, who's the next big player would you like to get out? Is it Coley or one of the other players?
Okay. Good question. My favourite wicket. I think my favourite wicket would have to be David Warner in the semi-final of the World Cup. Semi-final. But in fact, comfortably. Favourite wicket of all time, comfortably. And the player that I'd like to get out most, it'd probably have to be one of my England teammates. Who should we say? Johnny Bairstow. I'd really like to send Johnny back to the pavilion. That'd be nice.
Goody. Good question. Well, tell us about the Warner wicket. Why did you like that so much?
Yeah, so I mean, World Cup semi-final at Edgbaston, my home ground. He'd already hit me for 2 fours, I think it was, prior to that. It was the first over of a World Cup semi-final. He wanted to set the tone. I remember him hitting me for 4 first ball. And then my next over, he hit me over the top for 1 bounce 4. And it was that very next ball I nicked him off. And I don't know, it's just, one, the fact that obviously he looked in good form that day, which is worrying. You know, when he's in good nick, you know, you want to get him early. But it's also the occasion, the fact that I was at home, Edgbaston semi-final of a World Cup against the old enemy, to get him. Where he nicked the ball to Johnny at first slip, behind them in the crowd was my dad and my brother. It was almost like it was perfect. So it was a nice moment.
Oh, brilliant. Lovely story. Catherine's here. And I think Catherine's probably got a World Cup question as well, haven't you, Catherine?
I do, yes. When the World Cup final went to a super over, I was convinced that you were the man for the job. Was there any discussion about you bowling it? And would you have wanted that responsibility?
Well, thankfully, there was no discussion of me having it. Because there'd have been a few nerves flying around, that is for sure. But it's one of those. I think once Jofra had been was in our team, he was always our go-to death bowler from when he got into the team, particularly in that start of the World Cup. So almost my role kind of changed slightly, which was fine. But there was no doubt when it was to a super over, we were in the changing rooms. I was waiting for Morgs. Is Morgs going to come and tap me on the shoulder here or not? And then I saw him speaking to Jofra, so I kind of assumed that he was going to go to Jofra, which is fine. Obviously, if Morgs had asked me, then I would have obviously said yes. There's no way you could turn down that job. You're in the team as a main bowler to do those jobs, and I'd had to have taken it and try and do my best. But thankfully, Jofra got the job done.
What was it like for you, Catherine? You were watching. Were you thinking it's a bit of a risk?
Yes.
Giving Jofra the ball?
Yeah, in fact, I think I put on all my social media things, why aren't we bowling Chris Wokes? So at least Jofra proved me wrong.
But
where were you feeling, Chris?
I appreciate the confidence you have in me there. I really do.
Where were you fielding, Chris? Did you even touch the ball in the Super Over? I can't remember.
No, I didn't. I was at fine leg on the rope for all the deliveries to Neesham. And then this is something which I always forget. I think I was on the rope for the Coptal ball as well. But as soon as it was hit, I just started steaming into the circle. I was in the I was in the inner ring by the time Joss took the bales off. So I assume I just ran in. But I think it was at fine leg for for all deliveries, yeah.
You must have had a great view of the final ball then, if you were in the circle, sort of more or less square of the wicket, were you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I was kind of at 45, short 45 by the time that the thing that I really remember so clearly was the noise that Stumps made when Joss took the bales off. I still kind of have that sort of sound in my head. It's incredible, incredible moment.
Well, we've got some extra guests. That's nice. Introduce yourselves, everybody.
So, yes, we have myself, Paul, and we've got Oliver here on the right-hand side and Jasper on the left-hand side. They've each got a question for you. Oliver, I'll let you start off.
How nervous were you bowling the first ball of the World Cup and especially the second one after the first one went wide?
Good question.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me. To be honest, I was actually, it's probably the most nervous I've probably ever been on a cricket field. Just knowing that I, you know, had to bowl that first ball of a World Cup final, everyone watching. Naturally, I get nervous before the first ball of any cricket match. It doesn't matter what format it is, what status the game is at. You know, it could be a simple county game for Warwickshire, or it could be a final for England. You always have those first ball nerves. To be honest, that first ball, I was just glad that it hit the landing strip, to be honest. I wasn't, to be honest, I was a lot less nervous having the first one be for a wide. You know, it wasn't a horrendous wide, so to speak.
It wasn't a Harmison.
Yeah, it actually just swung a little bit down, more than I expected, down the slope, to be honest, at Lord's. So, I was fine with that, no problems.
Do you ever get nervous, Oliver? Do you play cricket and do you get nervous?
Yes. Okay. Especially when I have to bat the first for the first time or bowl the first time.
Okay. What's your solution to nerves? How do you cope with them?
Yeah,
or no. How would you tell a kid to cope with them?
Yeah, no. Nerves are good. Nerves are part and parcel of the game. It means you care. It means you want to do well. So there's no problem with having a few nerves. It's just kind of acknowledging that they're there, reacting, and just kind of then really channeling your focus a little bit more, because it's easy to think, oh, I'm nervous, and not actually concentrate on what you're actually trying to do. And I think what I've learned to do over my career is realize that you're nervous, which is fine, which is good, it means you care, but is then just thinking, right, what have I got to do? Really nail your skill and just focus on what you need to do.
Hi, Richard.
Hi, Simon. Hi, Chris. Thanks for your time. My question's around bowling. By some, you're seen as a bowler who can only be successful in English conditions. Do you think that's fair? And obviously played a part in the selection of the winter months just gone by. And the second part is, what do you think you can do to change people's opinions, which for what it's worth, I think are wrong, that you can succeed abroad as well as much as you can in England?
Yeah, it's... There's no doubt about it, the fact that it's harder for an English seam bowler to perform better abroad than it is in their home conditions. Naturally, that's always going to be the case. I think the amount of test matches I've played away from home kind of, I feel, scuppers the statistics a little bit. I haven't played a huge amount of games away from home. And when I have, I've generally been a first change bowler as well. I don't really tend to get the new ball or use the newer ball. But one thing that I did learn from last winter was trying to be as accurate as I can be with the Kookaburra ball. And worked with Darren Goff and Chris Silverwood on a few different things. And I had some good rewards last winter, albeit only for two test matches, one in New Zealand and one in South Africa. But I saw some good success, and those were due to the changes that I'd made. And they weren't massive, massive changes. It was probably more of a change in mindset more than anything. So I was
about
looking
just being content about bowling a maiden, do you mean, rather than worrying about the fact that it wasn't moving or something?
No, that as well. But I was also trying to bowl a little bit more of an aggressive length. I think in the past I've bowled a little bit short away from home. By trying to bowl a little bit quicker and into the pitch, I've actually bowled a little bit short. But you still need to bowl with that same intensity and same aggression, but that fraction a bit fuller. So almost be a little bit more, I suppose, be willing to go for runs almost. That's the way. You've always got to be willing to go to runs to create chances and to create wickets. But that seemed to work for me in the two test matches that I had last winter. I was looking forward to trying to implement that this winter, but obviously didn't get an opportunity. So that's where we are with that, unfortunately, Richard.
Right, we've got Mike here, have we? Hi, Mike.
Hello. Good evening, gentlemen.
You're a new recruit, are you?
Is that relatively. Right? Relatively. Yeah. No, good. Thanks.
Good,
thanks
good
for
to
doing
meet you. Where are you based?
In God's country, God's place himself, Birmingham. So
You know. Unfortunately,
Christo, wrong team for you, mate. I'm a blue nose. So
not blue and white, are you?
I am, yeah. Sorry. It's got off to a bad start, hasn't it now? Should I?
All right, I'll let you off, mate.
Cheers, mate. Appreciate that. Just a couple of questions, really. So just want to know sort of how long you think you'll continue playing for England. And you know, when the time comes. Do you see yourself returning to Warwickshire for a couple of years, sort of Marcus Trescothick style, or do you think that'll probably be the end of your career? And the second question, a little bit of a cheeky one, you're obviously the owner of the best hair in sport. if you've just got any tips on what to do, I know I've got a bit of a lockdown thing going on at the moment, but any tips would be appreciated.
Brilliant. So, mate, regarding playing, I'm keen to play for as long as I can. Obviously, I want to play for England for as long as possible. I mean, I've just turned 32. I'd probably like to think that I'm probably in the peak still of my career. I still feel like I've got a lot to give. Certainly, still got a lot to improve on. You know, I look at the likes of Jimmy and Brody, and you know what Jimmy's doing at the minute. He's at his age. Is you know, people keep saying, when's he going to finish? But there's no end in sight for him. You know, he's as fit as he's ever been and he's bowling as well as he's ever done. So, you know, hopefully I can take some inspiration from that. You know, whenever my international career does come to an end, I think I would like to go back to Warwickshire and give something back, a little bit more back to them, and hopefully perform well at county cricket for a few years. That would be something which I'd like to do, definitely. It's tricky being an England player. You don't get to go back to Warwickshire, as we were talking about earlier, as much as you'd probably like to, but it's just because of the scheduling. I love going back and playing for Warwickshire. You know, been there ever since I was a little boy. So certainly would like to go back there and play a few years, definitely. Regarding the Barnet, mate, you've got some good length there. You're not losing it. So
I'll be honest with you. I mean, and this is a little bit sort of a confessional. I've took pictures of you into the barber before and said I want my hair like that. And it's never quite worked for me.
This is April the 1st. This has got to be an April.
Honest to God, like, you know, but they've never quite got it right. I just wanted to know if there was anything they could do, like, or, yeah.
You just got to go. Only thing I say, you've got to go short. This is a terrible lid for me at the minute, mate. It needs a desperate cut. Short fade into the sides and the back, and then just leave a bit of a quiff, mate, and you'll just swoop it.
You need one of these, don't you? You need one of these. And I guess the other thing to say about Chris's hair is at least it's his own, which isn't the case with one or two of your colleagues, but we won't go there, maybe. we've got Will. Hi, Will.
My question to you, Chris, is kind of what the ECB should do more about promoting the game. Now, yes, we have got the ECB, they do the initiatives with, you know, the All-Stars and the Dynamos cricket thing that they do for the younger kids. It's coming from a professional player who's obviously played the game. What do you think they should do about it?
For me personally, obviously growing up, I used to watch cricket on TV. And it was on free-to-air television. And that part of the reason why I watched cricket, because if it had all been on Sky, I wouldn't have watched it. And I think that's a real big thing that the ECB can look to do in the future. I know we've certainly had that with the World Cup, which was obviously
and
brilliant.
And the Channel 4 coverage as well, with that being on, that being obviously on free to air, obviously, when you guys were obviously out in India, obviously.
Yeah. I think that's a big thing. It's hard, isn't it? Because obviously the game is, you know, financially, you get a lot of money from broadcast rights, and obviously Sky pump a lot of money into the game. And that obviously gets filtered down all the way through to grassroots. So it is tricky. It's hard to just say, oh, it should just be on free to air. But I think that would have a big impact on people actually getting to view the game and therefore maybe falling in love with it. I think the thing that it's focused on the younger generation is because, you know, the game, you don't want the game to die out, and you need the younger generation to take the sport up so that we've actually, you know, the game continues for years to come. So I think the ECB are doing good things from that side of things, in terms of the Dynamos and the All-Stars. With regards to promoting the game elsewhere, it's a tricky scenario, because I mean, what ideally you'd like players to be able to get themselves out there and get themselves in the public eye and kind of do events like that, where, you know, people see these cricketers actually in the flesh. At the minute with COVID, that's obviously quite tricky to do. So it's a hard balance. I think the reason that people get into the game is because they get into it at a young age. And I think that's the reason why the ECB have gone down the route that they have. I think it's hard to kind of get a 20, 25, 30-year-old plus to all of a sudden take the game up out of nowhere. I think that's kind of the reason why the ECB have gone down the route that they have.
Can we do the quiz, Simon?
Yeah, last requirement of your late evening in Mumbai, Chris, is the quiz. Everybody who comes into the virtual cricket club does the quiz.
This quiz is called, as you saw from the leaderboard there, it's called How Well Do You Know Yourself?
Yeah.
It starts with a bit of music. Get you in the mood. And it's 10 questions.
Question one, name two England Test players who were in the England under 19 side with you in 2007. So two players who've gone on to play Test cricket who were with you in the under 19 side in 2007.
Stephen Finn and Liam Dawson.
He's got it!
Well done. Very good. Do you know who the third one was?
I was going to say Stuart Meeker, but then I think he's only played ODIs.
He was in the side, but I think he has only played ODIs.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Adam Lythe was the other one. Okay, good. Question one out of one. Question two. Where did you score your first Test 50?
Oh, God, I don't know.
Not as difficult as you think.
Thoughts?
He's got it!
Very good. What game was it?
Was that against Sri Lanka, was it? Should have got 100 that day. Gave it away.
66 against Sri Lanka, 2016.
Right, so two out of two. Question number three. Everyone remembers their first Test wicket, but that's not the question.
Yeah.
Who was your second Test victim?
Oh, God.
Who was your second Test victim? And a little clue, it was nearly a year later. It was at Old Trafford.
Ooh. Murali Vijay?
Ooh!
He's got it!
Oh, God. Wow. To be fair, if you hadn't said Old Trafford, there's no way I'd have got that. No way I'd have got that.
Well, we do like to help people a little bit, but we didn't give you, we didn't go any further than that. So three out of three. Okay, well done.
Yeah, three out of three. Question four. What were your bowling figures in the World Cup final?
Oh, 3 for 38.
Give him that.
37.
He's got it.
He said it. Well,
he's got it.
3 for 37. He's got it.
3 for 37, was it?
Yeah.
We'll give you that. Yeah. Okay. Four out of four.
So four out of four. The question masters get a bit tougher if you start to do well. So question number five. If you get this one, I'll be surprised. But anyway, you might not. Anyway, I think this is the hardest one of all. Question number five. Who was your first ever first-class victim?
West Indies A. Oh, no. Renato Morton?
I thought this was a difficult question.
Who is it? It was
the West Indies A captain, Sylvester Joseph. Anyway, a tough one, I admit. That was one of the hardest questions we've had. But anyway, 4 out of 5, Chris.
Yeah.
Question 6. What is your batting strike rate in ODI cricket? And we'll give you a choice here. Is it 75, 80, 85 or 90? Your ODI strike rate batting.
I know what I'd like it to be. I don't know if it is. Is it 85? Oh. I'm lower. Is it lower? It must be lower then. Can't be 90.
No, it's 90. It's 90.87. Doing yourself down.
I was going to say, that's a bit quick for me. I didn't realise it was that good.
You're a better player than you think. See?
It's nearly a run of all that.
We'll get you in the team first, for Christ's sake. Anyway, right. Well, you weren't available, I suppose. You weren't available for those last three, so never mind. Anyway, they missed you. Okay, so that's 4 out of 6.
4 out of 6. Okay, question number 7. This is quite a difficult question as well. This was set by Yoz, I think. How many professional wickets have you taken? That's first class, test, list A and T20. 662, 762 or 862?
I think it is 772. No!
You're too modest.
Are you kidding me? What is it? Is it less than that?
It's 862.
It's 8.
Yes,
862. Oh, God, that's good. I'm impressed by that, actually.
Okay, so what are we? That's 4 out of 7.
Yeah, 4 out of 7. You're fading here.
Let's get for you right here.
Okay, right. So question 8, what happened to the last competitive ball you bowled?
The last professional game I played must have been England versus Australia at Old Trafford, last ODI.
Mm. Yeah, correct.
And my last ball.
Yeah.
I know the scenario. I finished my 10 quite early because me and Joff we came back and bowled early and took quite a few wickets. And kind of pegged them back, but I couldn't tell you what my last delivery. I'm assuming it was maybe a dot. Was it a dot ball?
It wasn't a dot ball. No, sorry. I mean, that was a good guess. Now, I think it's a bit of a harsh question, probably. It's my fault, but it was a tennis smash for two by Glenn Maxwell down the ground. In part of that partnership. I'll give you half a mark for that because it was a bit of a tough question and you got the game anyway. So give you half a mark for that.
Oh, I think I tell you what. I've got the game wrong there. I thought I was talking about the second game, not the last game. Yeah. Sorry, my bad.
Yeah. All right, I'll give you no points then. You got it all wrong. Right, no, zero for that, right. it was the last game when Alex Carey and Maxwell put on about 200.
Yes, yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Okay, right.
Well, that's 5 out of 8, isn't it?
Yeah, 4 out of 8, unfortunately.
Is it 4 out of 8?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
4.
Yeah. Right, question number 9. Put the test bowling averages in England of these three in order. Lowest first. So the three are you, Fred Truman, or James Anderson. Test bowling averages in England of those three. You
say Truman's probably got the lowest.
Now your big decision.
I don't know. I feel like this is a bit of a trick question somewhere. So I'm going to say that I'm next and then Jimmy.
He's got it!
Yes.
He's the correct answer. So 5 out of 9. You've gone past Alistair
Crook.
So
we'll give you that. Truman 20.04. Wokes 22.87. Yep. Anderson 23.83, and you also got a better average than Broad as well in England.
Take that,
good man.
Some big names there,
right? So that is the 5 out of 9. And the final question is, what do the England lads call you generally and why? What is the what is their favourite nickname for you and why do they call you that?
It's not Captain America, is it?
He's got it!
Very good. Like,
and
it.
Why are you called that?
Well, I assume because they think that I look like him. I don't know.
Because you haven't got a hair out of place.
That's right. The hair. It's the hair.
Excellent. Okay. What's that? Six out of ten. Six out of ten. Well done. Well done, Chris.
Six out of ten.
It was quite a tough quiz. There were some tough questions in there.
There were some toughies.
But they do call you Captain America sometimes, don't they?
Yeah, they do. You see, you're right. Wood, Stokes. Wood and Stokes, mainly, to be honest. Stokes is a big big Marvel fan, so I think Stokes, he might have started it, actually.
Very good. Well, you still haven't got hair out of place, even though you've got 6 out of 10. And tell us, you are well known, obviously, as the nicest man in cricket. There must be something that makes you angry. When do you lose it? And what about?
It's funny. I get angry all the time on the field, but people just don't really notice it. I mean, most bowlers will tell you that the most annoying thing as that can happen to a bowler is going for runs. Just full stop. Anyone hitting me for runs, it's like a dagger into the heart. It doesn't matter whether it's an extra single or, you know, it's not many runs or it's a one overthrow or something. Those are the sort of things that really, really, like batsmen throwing the ball at the stumps when there's no point whatsoever for a run out and it ricocheting off and going for runs. That probably winds me up the most, to be brutally honest. And then obviously there's times when, as a parent as well, when you're just pulling your hair out.
It'll only get worse, don't worry.
Not much, really. Not much else.
Well, listen, anyway, many thanks for your time. It's now, what, nearly 11:30, so it must be your bedtime. Although I know you need to get on kind of evening time sort of sync in a way. But anyway.
Thanks for having me.
See you in the summer sometime.
Best of luck. Fantastic. Yeah. Chris, thank you very much. Brilliant. And keep it up, Captain America. just hope you get a game for starters. Yeah, and I'm sure you do too.
Right. Yeah, so do I. Be nice to play some cricket.
Well, there you go. That's why Chris Wokes is known as Captain America by a couple of the England players. It's probably caught on a bit. And you can just see why he's known as the nicest man in cricket. I mean, he just is so pleasant, isn't he? And he's had such a tough winter. And, well, good luck to him, really, because he deserves a bit of fortune, a bit of time on the field, actually, doesn't he? So watch this space. He's playing for Delhi Capitals. I think the first match they have is about Sunday week. Don't know if he'll actually get in the side, but hope he does, because he deserves some opportunity. So that's Chris Wokes. And as I said, next week in the Virtual Cricket Club, Thursday, the 8th of April, we've got David Gower, 7 o'clock. And then Geoffrey Boycott is appearing for us the week after on Wednesday, the 14th of April. You can join our club by going to worldsbestcricketclub.com. And also, just another reminder about The Cricketer as well, www.thecricketer.com/centenary for that special £19.21 offer for 6 months subscription. It really is good. And I promise you, we're going to work extra hard to make the next few issues as good as possible. So I hope you can join us for the next issue of this. Actually, we're going to be looking ahead to the IPL and to the county season next week with two separate podcasts with a couple of guests. So I hope you can join us for that. Happy Easter to everyone. And also, thanks so much for supporting this podcast and hope you'll continue to do so.
Sports Social Podcast Network.